This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous sponsor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning right to you, Lori. This is a cool morning. I mean, this is April, the end of April, the middle, and it's so nice. I can't believe it.
It's lovely.
We will pay for it during the summer.
Yes, we will.
It will be hot as the devil.
And we've started you a minute and a half early because I know you always want to go late.
Well, does that mean I get to have an extra minute and a half anyway?
You got it already.
We'll see. All right, folks, so I mentioned a little while ago when Lori asked me to kind of give a quick rundown on what we're going to be talking about today, and let me just kind of get into it a little bit in more depth since I'm now on the radio.
Right.
Okay, so I want to talk about this memo from the FBI relating to Catholic Church surveillance in Richmond, Virginia. Supposedly, they did it. And I really want to talk about that, okay? Then I want to get into this whole leaker issue. There are some real questions about how does this happen? I mean, look, we've had Chelsea Manning. Remember, she was a man before she's a she. But Manning did the same thing. Low-rated, enlisted man, excuse me, who finds all sorts of, top-secret stuff, okay? You would have thought that they would have learned. But you know what? Obama pardons this idiot. I mean, that sends a message that maybe we're not too serious about this stuff. Okay, be that as it may, I know it's a long time ago, but it doesn't help when you get pardoned for doing the kinds of things that ostensibly this guy did. But like I said, there are some issues with this, and I want to get into that in a little bit more detail.
Okay.
Questions about China. Okay, I mean, here we are, their president comes to visit with us, and congressmen go there, McFaul especially important, and the Chinese go crazy like they did with Pelosi last summer. So we need to kind of examine this and put this into the context of what Thomas Friedman from the New York Slimes is trying to tell us about why all of this is important and why there's no trust between us. And you know what? I mean, this guy's been writing about China for 30 years. You'd think he would know something by now. But to talk about no trust as one of the problems? Well, no kidding. Why should we trust them after what they've done? So I'm getting ahead of myself, but Lori's holding me back.
One thing at
She's
a time.
She's got the finger on the button
One
before
thing
I
at
say
a time.
Something really bad. Okay, so we want to talk about that. And I want to link it to this whole fentanyl problem. Basically, if you really look carefully at it, Dr. Gorka had this really good exposition here. All the wars of the Cold War, Korea, Vietnam, the War on Terror, killed about 103,000 American service people, okay? Fentanyl has already killed 110,000 Americans. I mean, let's kind of think about this in terms of, the geostrategic issue that's there and the degree to which this open border policy of our good buddy Biden is just unleashing the dogs of hell on our people, especially young people. So, I mean, that's depressing enough, okay? There are issues that I want to talk about, too, in terms of the question of what's going on with all these killings by these trans people. I want to spend a little bit of time on that and try to frame it along the lines of it really isn't the gun that's doing this. It's these people who are injecting all sorts of drugs into their system that may very well become have had a negative impact on their brains. So let's kind of do that. Then last segment is going to be with Stephanie Dernan. Stephanie's going to call in about 10:35, and we'll try to catch up on what's going on at the state level, particularly with her health care bills and the importance of the fact that she's gotten a couple gone. And I want to talk a little bit about the Price Act, which is something that I've commented on and created some issues with Eagle Forum, because I think that there are some things that need to be looked at before we go forward with the Parents' Rights Act. So we'll see about that. All right, so let's start with this whole business of what's going on with the FBI and a memo that wants to target Catholic churches in Richmond, Virginia. As my understanding is that they actually targeted five churches, Catholic churches in Richmond, Virginia. So the question is, well, I mean, there are several questions. I mean, in the first place, what in the hell are they really thinking? But you know, just asking that question leads you right back to, well, what were they thinking when they put out memos targeting parents going to stupid school board meetings, calling them terrorists? So let's put it into proper perspective then. The reality is there's something radically wrong in the damn FBI. I mean, it's that damn simple. And you can say, well, you know, Trump brought it on himself. Yeah, Russia collusion, they had to react to that. BS. They knew the dossier was false, and yet they went ahead and did it anyway. What does that mean? It means that they are out of control. They are. And this is just another example of it, and it's an example that one can argue smells like, looks like, and probably is police state action. So the real question is going to be, what are our elected officials in the federal government going to do about this? It's a question that I'm going to ask our members to get in touch with our representative, Jerry Carl, and grill him on this. What is he doing to push back on this kind of police state behavior? Now, to a large degree, the horse is already out of the barn. Nothing happened to Comey. Nothing happened to any of these people involved in the whole Trump hoax business. Nothing. Why is that? Well, I suppose the deep state protects its own. And with the Democrats in charge, you know that that's exactly the case. And you also know, as we talked about last week, this whole business with the DA Bragg in Manhattan doing his nut job on Trump. So, again, put it all together, and what you get is a picture that certainly is far different than what most of us grew up with the FBI. Although, I have to say, okay, the FBI has always had problems, particularly under the Hoover administration. Okay? We know what they did with Nixon and Watergate. The deep throat was the assistant FBI director. So it's not as though their hands have been clean forever. But I would say that this is just, it's so far above and beyond any kind of normal behavior that we've come to expect with the FBI. The best professional, you know, investigators in the world. And they probably are. But what they're doing now is not just investigating. They are being used to weaponize political, to become, well, let me rephrase that. Hey, it's Monday morning. Okay, I'm gobbly-gobbly here. All right.
That's okay.
So what they're doing is weaponizing political discourse. Parents who are mad about what's going on in the school system, hey, they're target them. And why are they targeting them? Because they were told to do so by all sorts of different people from the education world. Okay? And so they're reacting to those things. And that's exactly what you see today. Comey and the rest of them laid the predicate for moving the FBI into a truly police state system. And guess what? If the Democrats are somehow able to win the presidency and somehow win back the House and keep the Senate, it's over. Okay? There's no coming back from this. And the only way that we can come back from it is to control the presidency and the House and the Senate and clean House. That's got to be the message to Jerry Carl and the rest of these folks up there in D.C. I mean, it is just absolutely incredible. But notice, too, when you frame this along the lines of the Catholic Church, what's going on with Catholic doctrine that is in direct opposition to secular ideology that has been embraced by the crazies? Just like they've embraced climate change as a religion, they've also embraced the argument that Catholic doctrine and all Christian doctrine is hate speech. Okay? They hate homosexuals. They hate transgenders. They're opposed to all the kinds of things that the progressive radical left wants. And so you classify it as hate speech. You classify it as, they're going to do more than just talk bad about people. They're going to actually do bad things. Now, I mean, it's an interesting juxtaposition here. The people who are doing the bad things aren't Catholics and Christians. It's the trans folks. And like I said at the beginning of this, I want to talk a little bit about this. So maybe I'll just get to it right now. You have this whole culture that's moving you in the direction that trans is fine. Everything is good. You know, they have a right to do everything. And again, from a certain perspective, if you want to do that crap, go ahead. I mean, you know, it's a free country. Just don't impose all of your beliefs on other people who don't accept it. So I guess what you're really looking for here is some sort of a tolerant approach to it. But it isn't tolerant. And it isn't tolerant on their side because they want this to be wholesale, you know, whatever they say goes. So if you as a parent have a child that is 8 years old and somehow is talking to the counselor about having mixed feelings about what sex that person is, then the counselor, according to the American School Counseling Association, has the right to move that child into a formal discussion about becoming trans, which would mean, you know, doing all sorts of things to modify that child's, you know, makeup. Now, Alabama passed a law that basically said you can't do that. Doctors cannot give trans-type drugs. Can't do trans operations. So we've tried to protect the children here, but according to the trans doctrine, that's a hate crime. So where do we go from here with this? It seems to me that trying to just basically say, well, biology doesn't really work anymore because we say, you know, if you want to be a man, you can be a man. If you want to be a woman, you can be a man. Well, what happens if I want to say tomorrow that I want to be black? You know? How does this work in the real world? And so my solution to this really is that you want to be trans, fine, have at it. Don't impose it on the rest of us. And don't create, you know, barriers to parents who are concerned about what's going on with their kids, which is a whole big issue in terms of education, not just in terms of trans questions. It goes to the heart of trying to make sure that the parents know what's being taught in the schools, which you would think is a no-brainer. But boy, I'll tell you what, parents sure woke up during the pandemic when they saw all the crap that's going on because the kids were on Zoom. And they saw what was being taught. And it got them fired up. I just wish that we would get more fired up here in Alabama. We have destroyed Alabama education with Common Core. But, oh, that's Dr. Lunatic talking here now, you know. It's really a sad commentary on how the educrat establishment has become woke, and they have moved in this direction to ensure that wokeism is going to be brought into into Alabama schools. Now, that's going to be a topic for another day, okay? But the fact of the matter is you've got all of these kinds of things moving in the wrong direction, and parents are fighting not only the schools, but they're fighting inflation. They're fighting all sorts of crazy stuff happening. And they're supposed to just kind of chug along, make it all right for their kids. It would be nice if Kay Ivey, you know, helped them out by getting rid of Common Core. But oh no, she goes even further by letting the school board choose this book, Amplify, which is another woke reading, you know, book for K-3. I don't know. I mean, it seems like, you know, we keep knocking our heads against this wall, and sometimes it seems like we're making some progress, but other times we're nowhere. For the school board here in Alabama to go ahead and say yes to Amplify is a symptom of the complete deterioration of any kind of conservative thinking on that school board. Luckily, as I've mentioned to you, Baldwin County did not choose that book, okay? Thank goodness they didn't. But the point is, what are the other 67 county school boards doing? We need to find that out, and we're trying to do that. So here again, we get into this whole business of, you know, where we are with this particular issue that leads into another issue, as I've suggested to you, in terms of, you know, if the FBI is going to start looking at Catholic churches and other, you know, other churches, then we're in trouble. And we best have our elected officials hold the line and get on with this. That's my take on that. All right, so let's talk a little bit about this leaker issue. I've got Stephanie coming on in about 12 minutes or so. All right, so
fill us in for those that haven't watched the news.
Okay.
Give us a synopsis of what happened.
All right. Back in January, on some of these, how do you want to say it, chat rooms, okay? Discord is one, all right? These folks who were on chat, the chat room, had their own little conversations, doing war games and things like that. And evidently, during one of their conversations, as I understand it, they got into an argument, and one of the chat room guys said, well, take a look at these things, these items, the documents that I've got, and that'll end the discussion, okay? So he posts some of these things. The next thing you know, you've got about 100 documents that ostensibly were taken from top secret sources and put on the internet. Now, this is back in January. So that raises a real question. How is it that the government didn't find out about this until April? Okay? So when you start looking at it from that perspective, I mean, that's outrageous. I mean, we're spending billions of dollars a year with all of the intelligence, smartest people in the world, blah, 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 and we can't find this?
Right.
Now, the answer they give is that, well, our intel people are not allowed to get on these chat rooms and all like that, so they don't necessarily, they would not necessarily be monitoring all that, so there's that issue there. Whatever the case is, okay, we certainly don't want to have a law that's going to be passed where they do have access to everything, so they can monitor everything that's going on out there. But you know as well as I do, they're already doing this through the left-wing woke people who monitor what the hell is going on. I mean, that's what the whole Twitter business is all about. The FBI and the Biden campaign, and after the campaign was over and he won, they're still doing this. So my point here is, it makes no sense that they didn't find out about this right away. Okay.
Right.
All right. So that's one point.
And
okay?
The poster was a young National Guardsman.
Well, you
is
see,
that
that's another issue. Yes, and that's another issue. He's a 21-year-old. He went in, I think when he was 18 or 19. He's been in there as an E3, you know, and that's a very low-ranking, you know, enlisted man. Okay, there's nothing against enlisted men. Okay, the point is though, and this is where this one particular individual who I happen to have met, he was a good friend of one of my Marine buddies, Larry Johnson, who is a former CIA guy. Larry Johnson has written about this and said, look, there are some red flags out here. Okay. And I'll just read off a couple of them, okay? And his experience with the CIA, working with, you know, top secret documents and all like that, for 18 years he was involved with this. He basically says he's never seen an E3 in a security area with a top secret clearance. Now, that doesn't mean that that can't happen, but he and several other officers, retired colonels in Air Force, basically are making the same point, that the chain of command should have been involved with all this, but somewhere it wasn't there. If this E3 had been in sensitive areas without any supervision, it just doesn't really happen. Now, where I'm going, where Larry Johnson's going with this, is this isn't necessarily this kid doing this, that this is a setup. Okay? So think about another red flag, okay? Basically, there's a question in Larry's mind about an operational CIA ops document. It's an installation report that's never seen that he's never seen in an 18-year career, but how did this young man get this? So there's a document that doesn't make sense in terms of whether or not it should have been in a place where this young E3 could find it, okay? Suggesting that somebody put it there, okay?
An intentional leak.
Yes, okay.
And wasn't this about Russia and Ukraine and the United States? What
well,
was it
yeah,
about?
Well, you see, yes, okay, so you've got the leak issue. You've got the question about the red flags associated with this young man who, in theory, never should have had an opportunity to get this if the system was working right. So you could have a Chelsea Manning breakdown in the system, okay? You could. But then on the other hand, post-Chelsea Manning, one can argue that the system was tightened up and that the chain of command never would have let this kid get into a space where he could find these kinds of documents, okay? All right, so that's issue two. So issue three is, well, what did the document say? And here again, we get back to some contradictory issues. On the one hand, we've been told all along there are no U.S. forces involved with this. Well, come to find out to the document, there may be special forces involved. We've been told that, you know, Ukrainian casualties were very low, that they're kicking ass out there to the Russians. And according to the documents, that's not quite the case. There have been heavy, you know, Ukrainian casualties. We've been told that the Biden people are doing everything to get the Ukrainians all the equipment they need, air defense and all like that. And yet the document shows that the air defense system is breaking down because there is not sufficient air defense capability, particularly around Kyiv. All right. There are other issues that are out there. But Larry Johnson's point is that, on the one hand, you've got these red flags that I mentioned, and on the other hand, you've got a contradictory message about the nature of the war and how well it's going. Okay. Now, I think last week I talked a little bit about what was going on in the Eastern Front area, and there's one major town that I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it's Bakhmut. Okay, that town is a central part of what Ukraine needs to be able to do if they are going to dislodge the Russians in the Eastern Donetsk area and retake some of that territory. Now, why is that important? Because for a spring offensive to be successful means that those territories that the Russians already have in the eastern area have to somehow be taken back. Bakhmut seems to be the critical place where if the Ukrainians are successful, then they can probably roll up the rest of the area. Okay, so this document, these leaked documents, are questioning whether or not there's going to be success in the forthcoming spring offensive, whenever it takes place. So here then we get many of the pundits talking about how this is all lies that we've been told and all like that. Look, we've talked here with about the Ukraine war just about every week, okay? And the fact of the matter is, I still believe that Putin could not be allowed to do what he's doing, okay? But I've also suggested that Biden and his team have been failing miserably in terms of deterring Putin right from the beginning by not sending timely equipment and the means to defend themselves, and that's a major issue. And so one can argue that we still have these major issues there, and as a result, you know, Biden's rosy picture of what's going on may not necessarily be true. Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you all that this leaked document, you know, is the be-all and end-all, okay? The issue remains, regardless of what this document says, is do we have an interest in dealing with Putin's aggression in Ukraine? And my short answer to that is yes, we do, okay? Does that mean that we should be willing to go to nuclear war? No, I've suggested to you, and I think it's an outrage that Biden has gotten us to the point where, you know, Putin feels as though he has to, you know, threaten nuclear war. And in fact, I would argue that he's deterring us from doing what we feel is necessary. But on the one hand, you know, we've been doing things, but as I've argued before, it's not sufficient. So, and it plays right into the China card too, which I will talk about after we finish with talking a little bit with Stephanie Dernan on what's going on with health freedom and the bills she has. So Stephanie's just called in. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, yes, it is a good morning in a way, but I start talking about Russia and this and that, and all of a sudden it's not such a good morning anymore. So help me out. Give me some good news. What's happening at Health Freedom that we should be encouraged about?
Well, first, Dr. Liu, I've got to tell you happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Laura,
you're welcome.
Today is your birthday.
Today is my birthday, yes,
ma'am. How did that escape me? Happy birthday.
Thank you very much to both of you. Okay. Yeah, so now that we've got that out of the way, tell us about what's going on with Health Freedom that gives me hope.
Well, we have some exciting news, Dr. Luz. Bill HB 31 that had so much support last year, there was actually so much support that there were over 350,000 emails sent in support of that bill. And if you go and Google HB 31 to this day, Google will pop up the Alabama Health Freedom Act. But as we know, every year we have to refile the bill and it gets a new number.
Right.
The Alabama Health Freedom Act was filed on Thursday and is now known as HB 324.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about HB 324 and who's supporting it and what we can do to help you get this thing passed.
It's so important. This is a piece of legislation that will protect us as well as future generations from ever having to deal with the discrimination that came with vaccine mandates ever again. We call it never again legislation.
Right.
Representative Ernie Yarbrough, who is out of Trinity, is our bill sponsor, and he's really knocking them out of the park as it pertains to conservative issues for sure.
Right.
But what the Alabama Health Freedom Act does is it stops discrimination based upon your vaccination status. So if you are trying to segregate your employees based upon their vaccination status, give them different salaries because of their vaccination status, telling them that they can't return to the office, holding them in different areas,
right,
requiring them to wear different uniforms or different badges, this bill would make all of that illegal, which would essentially do away with vaccine mandates from an employment standpoint.
Super. So I guess the key question now is, what's the process in terms of getting a vote on it, and what can we do to help?
Well, the bill has been assigned to the Health Committee, which we know has turned out to be one of our arch nemesis when it comes to freedom from COVID vaccine mandates and
right,
whatnot. So Representative Paul Lee is still the committee chairman on that particular committee. So we need everybody to contact their House representative and tell them to support HB 324 and do what they can to move this bill through committee, whether that's contacting Representative Paul Lee or anybody else on the Health Committee as well. And if you go to our website, we have a contact section of our website that will give you the phone numbers and email addresses of all the members of the House Health Committee.
Okay, so what's your website? How do we get to that?
Our website is www.healthfreedomalabama.com. And we would encourage all of your listeners, just go ahead and register as a member on our website right there. It's free, and you will get the benefit of getting information first. You will get calls to action by text message, so you'll be some of the first people to know when a legislator is doing something bad to undermine our freedoms or liberties, and you'll get some very important emails about how you can take action for health freedom as well.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay, so what else is going on up there with Health Freedom? I know that Representative Chip Brown is working with you. Tell me about that.
Representative Chip Brown was able to get a bill out of committee, HB 186, last week, which really is a parents' rights bill. And what that does is it allows parents who have children in K-12 schools, public schools, to opt out of any future mask mandates that the schools may hand down. That's very important for parents' rights. So we need everybody to contact their health representative and tell them to vote yes on HB 186.
Okay. Well, I mean, those are two exciting bills. Is there anything else that you have in store to rock those people up there in Montgomery?
Well, there was some controversy a couple of weeks ago around Speaker Ledbetter's adoption bill, and I think we touched base about that issue a couple of weeks ago when I spoke to you, but for anybody new that's listening, in the state of Alabama, if you want to foster or adopt children through DHR, you have to be fully vaccinated, as do the children in your home, up to and including the COVID vaccine. So DHR does not have a policy where they accept religious or medical exemptions within their policy manual. It's really just a case-by-case basis, and lots of families who would like to foster children in our state and be and play an important role in getting these children into safe and loving homes have not been able to do so since 2019 because of these vaccine mandates that have been placed upon foster families in our state. So Representative Yarbrough sponsored an amendment in the House, and that would allow these families to foster and adopt despite their vaccination status. Unfortunately, that failed, but Senator Arthur Orr in the Senate did include this amendment in his bill on the floor, and it passed out of committee unanimously on Thursday.
Oh, good.
Now, the bill doesn't specifically say that DHR just can't take the vaccination status into account when it is fostering or completing those certifications for foster families, but it does require DHR to create policy where they have to deal with those. So it's a step in the right direction, although I am concerned with some of the verbiage if DHR is going to actually follow through with the intent of that amendment, which is to open up more homes to foster care and adoption in Alabama.
Well, let me ask you this. Wouldn't HB 324 eliminate the ability of the foster care people to say no based on, you know, your status of your VAC status?
HB 324 would accomplish all of those things in our state. We wouldn't have to nitpick these one bills one at a time. It would accomplish that goal throughout Alabama. So absolutely, HB 324 is kind of the end-all be-all when it comes to stopping discrimination based upon anybody's vaccination status in the state.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, it seems like you're in direct opposition to what Ledbetter wants to do. Do you think that you're going to be able to persuade him to let 324 go forward for a vote?
You know, Ledbetter is more of the same up in Montgomery from what we're seeing. There really hasn't been that many changes. His personal policies and his personal history of being a Democrat up until very recently causes us some great concern about what we're going to be able to get done from a conservative standpoint.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely, you know, be there to help you in any way we can. If you have to have another march on the walk around the state house, I mean, that was pretty effective, and I think that these people, especially now that they've just had their re-election, so I mean, how willing they are to take an interest in supporting things that they inherently don't want to support. That's something that I guess we'll just have to cross that bridge when we get to it. But I certainly wish you the best with that, and please let us stay in touch, and we're there to help. Is there anything else you want to bring up, Stephanie?
Well, Dr. Lou, we just appreciate you so much for letting us get the word out. And, you know, when you have the ability to mobilize large amounts of people to take action for a conservative cause, it makes those lawmakers up there tremble with fear. And I really think that's the key to grassroots. So the more that we are able to gather into our army to stand up for freedom and liberty, the better. Have you mentioned who the speaker is in your group tonight yet?
Say again?
Have you mentioned who the speaker is going to be at your meeting tonight?
Oh, not yet. I usually do that at the end. But tonight we do have Brian Dawson, who is the CEO and owner of 1819 News. So, yeah, I mean...
Where is this and when?
It's at El Rancho at 6 p.m. in Daphne. And I was going to, but you jumped the gun, but that's okay. I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, since I'm talking about state issues, there is this Eagle Forum bill about parents' rights. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, or do you want me to just talk about it separately?
I don't know which bill you're talking about for parents' rights.
It's the
Health Freedom Group.
The Price Act, yeah. Yeah, it's different than what you're doing. All right, we'll keep you on the track of health freedom, okay? But listen, I really appreciate you coming on, Stephanie.
And what's your contact information again, Stephanie?
We can be reached at www.healthfreedomalabama.com.
Very good. Healthfreedomalabama.com. And thank you for all y'all have done.
Thanks again,
Stephanie.
Thank you
very much. Y'all have a great day.
See you tonight. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye. Well, since let me wrap up on state issues a little bit, okay? The Price Act is a bill they're still in the process of getting it dropped. That was the last thing I heard about it. But the Price Act is an opportunity for parents to get state funds to take their child to the school of their choice. That's the parent rights part of this, okay? The evolution of the bill, I would argue, comes from the frustration that parents have with the failing public school system, okay? Now, the reality is that these schools are stuck. And here again, I mentioned it a little while ago. They're stuck with a system that's based on Common Core. And that drives everything. And the fact that up until just last year, we were 52nd in math in the national assessments and 48th in English language arts. That didn't happen just because we have bad teachers or not enough money or any of those kinds of things. Alabama education has had four of the highest budgets that they've ever had in terms of education. So money is not an issue. Proration is not an issue, as one of the, you know, gurus of education told our team in 2021. No, proration, money, not an issue. The only issue is the fact that in 2010, Alabama was rated 25th in the nation, mainly because in 2003, Alabama had adopted a reading program, the ARI, Alabama Reading Initiative, and it worked. This is what's so outrageous about this crap, okay? It worked. So we slid from 25th in 2010 right to 52nd in less than 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It is a wow. But you see, the problem we face, have faced, and continue to face, is that the educrats in the Alabama State Department of Education believe in Common Core. They are woke to the nth degree. They believe all the stuff that's out there with us, all the things we're fighting, CRT, 1619, you name the alphabet thing, they're in favor of it and we're opposed. And they're in charge. Okay? What we have tried to do is to move the State Board of Education to replace Common Core. And I've said this to you all before. Well, we've had, you know, some success. We had four members of the State Board of Education ready to replace it. The fifth member was going to be, guess who? Governor Ivey. But Terry Latham couldn't convince the governor to become the fifth vote in the summer of 2021. She told Terry Latham, I'm going to start a task force. We're going to find out. Well, that task force was A+. And what you got was A+'s interpretation of the problem, and it led to the Numeracy Act, which was a BS act. Creates a $94 million bureaucracy to send teachers out to teach the teachers how to teach Common Core math. I mean, it's nuts. So, look, we're hoping that the Numeracy Act, as flawed as it is, actually does say no Common Core. Well, we're going to hold them to their feet to the fire on that, and we'll see how far we can go. I mean, we gave up on the legislators doing anything with it. Every year we've had a bill before the Education Committee in the House, and it dies because Terry Collins, paid for by BCA money to keep her reelected, you know, she and the rest of the upper crust didn't want to even bring that up. So my sense of this is that this point is that we're not dead yet. We think that there are ways that we can skin this cat, but it's going to take efforts, and we're in the process of making those efforts this session. So we'll see how this goes. But I do think that the Price Act has its problems that I articulated in an action alert that I sent out to the Alabama Conservative Coalition and to our people here at Common Sense, and basically said, look, you know, this is a backdoor to controlling private education and the homeschoolers. And you say, well, how is that possible? Because you take state money, it opens the door open. And here's where it will happen. A+ is going to start doing studies that point out that we're sending, you know, state money to these failing schools, you know, white flight schools, schools that don't perform. They're going to do that. And once they start doing that, the cry is going to become, we've got to control these. These people that we're sending this money to, they have got to abide by what we're teaching, our standards. And if they do that, and somehow the legislature decides that, my God, they're right, we can't send state money to these schools that don't know what they're doing, or to these homeschoolers who don't know what they're doing, we've got to step in. That's the argument I've made about this. I'm not the only one making it, but I'm just saying to you that how does this end? And you've already seen in Arizona and Utah a movement towards limiting what's being taught to what the state wants to be taught. And let me just finish on this. In 2015, Superintendent Bice, this is the guy who gave us that wonderful Common Core, Bice basically said he wanted to, he had an attempt to try to control homeschoolers and private schools. Bentley, to his credit, one of the few things you can give him credit for, said no to that. Shut him down. Now, do you think for a second that that's an idea that isn't embedded in the Alabama State Department of Education? Well, you better think twice. These people don't want homeschooling. They don't want private education. Because guess what?
They can't control it.
They can't control it. So, all right, so I've got 5 minutes left. Do I?
About eight.
Eight, okay, good. All right. Let me shift from Alabama to back to, I didn't get a chance to talk about this China question before Stephanie called in. And I want to try to finish up on this. All right, so you have this situation where, Let's make this easy to understand, okay? Couple of things happening, all right? You saw during the Trump administration, Trump calling China out, okay? Tariff them, unfair trade practices, blah, 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 okay? You know the litany of the problems, okay? You also know that even during the Trump period, the Chinese were sending fentanyl to Mexico to be transported across the country, okay? But because Trump had some control over the border, it wasn't as serious a problem as it is today. So let me frame this along the lines of fentanyl is being used as an act of war to kill young Americans. And you say, okay, well, how can you say that? Well, look at this. In the Korean War, Vietnam, and the War on Terror, we lost about 103,000 soldiers, airmen, men, you know, all the rest of the Marines, Army, whatever. Fentanyl has already killed 110,000. Already killed 110,000 this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So think about China as a strategic enemy, as as Commander Cox has pointed out to us. They have a long war game plan, okay? And they want to be number one, and they are moving in that direction, okay? A combination of being able to leverage their economic growth over the last 10 years to rebuild their military, to make it a very powerful one, whether it's a Navy that now is bigger than the U.S. Navy, whether it's missile development that is extremely deadly, particularly to our 7th Fleet in the Pacific area, you know, anti-ship missiles, and a large, army and air force that are very well funded, very well trained, and capable, okay? All right. So that's another part of this equation, all right? The third part of the equation is Taiwan. And again, going back to Nixon and Kissinger, you know, the one China policy. Now, I've suggested, and Commander Cox have suggested, that the one China policy does not necessarily mean that China, in and of itself, really has historic, you know, claims to what was called Formosa, is now Taiwan, okay? But Nixon and Kissinger, in order to make nice with the Chinese, okay, and understand this, the Chinese were scared to death of the Russians in 1969 when the Russians kicked their butts in the Yasuri River. This whole idea of the Sino-Soviet, you know, arguments, and they were fighting, ideologically fighting over what communism meant. And Mao was much more aggressive about this. He thought that the communists in Russia were not real communists. Okay? They were capitalist roaders, to use the phrase. Okay? So you had this disagreement within the Chinese and Russians. Why did that make an impact on Nixon? Because we were trying to separate the Chinese from supporting the Vietnamese. It laid the predicate for Nixon to be able to get out of, you know, withdraw with honor out of Vietnam, which we know fell apart. But my point here is, it made sense for us to do something with China to hurt the Russians, and we did. So all I'm suggesting to you is that the one China policy about Taiwan only made sense then. It never was a commitment, in my view, to continue to do what Biden continues to do, which is to not arm Taiwan to the teeth. Again, one of the things that we've seen is that evidently 3 years' worth of paid armaments have not been delivered, okay?
To
Taiwan. Now, once again, notice what I've said to you all before. Biden slow walks, you know, support to Ukraine. Okay? The criticism that many people have made, basically that slow walking the Ukrainian armaments led to a lack of deterrence on the ground and led Putin to think, especially after Afghanistan, oh yeah, I will kick their ass and I'm going to do it. And sure enough, he launches his war in February of 2022. All right, so that's partly where we are. And I would argue that that Taiwan's defense at this point means not only, you know, defending Taiwan from being taken over by China, but we have a major interest in terms of 90% of the world's, you know, chips are coming out of Taiwan. 60% of the world's trade travels through the Taiwan Strait. I mean, so if China shuts the Trace Strait down by taking Taiwan, well, we lose out on both ends of it. It complicates things. But this is where I really disagree with Thomas Friedman. Okay, now Tom Friedman has been, you know, New York Times correspondent, Pulitzer Prize winner, all of that kind of hoorah. I get that. But one of the things he said in a Sunday piece that he wrote for the Times was that, and again, understand this, here's a man who wrote this whole idea that the world is flat, meaning that because of major changes in global economics, you didn't have tariffs, barriers, everything was flattened out. Kumbaya was the way to approach things. If the world was going to grow, then we had to make sure that things stayed flat. Well, the flat world started to go away a long time ago after he wrote this. And I would argue, and I've argued in my international relations class, the world is not flat. Okay? Yes, there are aspects of it that are flat. But you tell me that the Iranians are part and parcel of a flat world. You tell me that North Korea is. You tell me that the Chinese are part of a flat world doing what they do, or that the Ruskies are too. No, it's not a flat world. If it was for a short period of time, maybe. But the reality is, it ain't flat today. And so Tom Friedman is now telling us one of the major issues is that the United States and China are lacking trust. No kidding. God, I want to say something worse than no kidding. Push that button.
I'm ready.
She's ready. All right. No kidding. Now, why do we not have any trust? Okay? Could it be because of all the things that Trump pointed out when he took over? Just maybe. Could it be because they're doing the same kind of things that the communists have always did, killing people who are in opposition to them? You know, they've got a surveillance state that is beyond belief. They are in control. Okay? It's an anthill society. And so Friedman doesn't really see that as a problem because he's argued that the Chinese have always done so well because they could get things done. Really, at the expense of liberty and freedom, sure. Hell, turn me over to run the country. I'll make sure the trains run on time, too. It ain't no damn hardship, okay? But if you're interested in like Churchill said, you know, democracy may be the worst, but it's also the only thing that really works. And because it is democracy, it's messy, you know? So my point here is that Tom Friedman still doesn't get it, okay? And he's unwilling to dive into the reasons why we are at the state of affairs we are with China. And as long as he's going to close his eyes to that, there ain't no hope for people like that. Go ahead and try to read his column if you can pick it up. But he's out to lunch, and I'm sorry. Trump was absolutely right about what needs to be done with China, and we have better make sure that we have a deterrent factor in Taiwan today. So, Lori.
Very, very informative. Very
interesting. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. This is always a fun time with us, but we do have serious things to talk about. So I will have a serious talk with everybody next Monday. What is the 24th of April?
And your Common Sense campaign meeting again
Common
is
Sense
tonight?
Common Sense campaign meeting tonight, 6 o'clock, El Rancho and Daphne. It's right on 98. And if you want to hear a really great speaker, you know, Brian Dawson, who owns the 1819 News. And then we also have Wayne Christopher, who's going to talk about election integrity. So we've got two great talks tonight. So
okay.
Thank you all. Have a great week. Au revoir.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash, as well as an anonymous sponsor. If you missed part of this and you want to hear it later, it will be posted at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming with a happy birthday wish to Dr. Lou. Happy birthday today.
Oh, today is your birthday. And I wish you many, many, many more. Oh, today is a special day, one you never had before. I'll send you flowers by the hour, candy and perfume. I'm gonna shower you, precious baby, birthday baby, tonight. Oh, today is your birthday. I wish you many, many, many more. Oh, today is a special day, one you never had before. I'll send you flowers by the hour, with candy and perfume. I'm gonna shower you, pretty baby, birthday baby.